This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Republican lawmakers continued their planning session in Philadelphia. One of the major topics today was the repeal and replace of Obamacare. Some complications on the replace. We'll talk about that with Arizona Congressman Trent Franks. I'll also get his thoughts on President Trump's speech to the gathering earlier today. Also, tomorrow is the annual March for Life here in Washington, D.C., where hundreds of thousands converge on the city to mark the anniversary of the infamous 1973 Roe versus Wade decision. With the media all abuzz about marches and crowd sizes, will the media report on the march? An event they often overlook. Media Research Center's Dan Gaynor is here for that discussion. And the District of Columbia recently authorized physician-assisted suicide. But Congress may have the last word on the matter. Ohio Congressman Brad Winstrup is here to explain. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins, lots of resources there for you at the website, TonyPerkins.com. Earlier today, by the way, I was on started the morning on C-SPAN with the Washington Journal talking about a number of the topics we're going to talk about today. But I want to go ahead and get to my first guest. House and Senate Republicans continued to meet in Philadelphia for their annual policy retreat. President Trump spoke to them earlier today, as did Vice President Mike Pence. They also heard from the Prime Minister of Britain, Theresa May. But one of the policy discussions that has consumed a lot of the time is the issue of repealing and replacing Obamacare. Joining us now to discuss this, our good friend, Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona. He represents the 8th Congressional District. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hello, hello from Philadelphia, Mr. Tony.
Have you been to see the Liberty Bell?
I have in the past, yes, sir. I haven't this trip, but I've seen it. It's a magnificent thing to see. Really, you know, kind of brings it all home, doesn't it?
It does. You know, I actually like Philadelphia. I've had a chance to go up there a number of times and just tour, and actually different times taken one of my kids up and just spent a couple of days touring the area. You know, Gettysburg's not too far from there.
Yes, sir.
The Valley Forge. It gets so many things to see. It's just a fascinating city. Of course, what's fascinating now is this point in history that we are at, where the Republicans have control of the House and the Senate, the White House. A lot of responsibility comes with that authority that's been given to the Republicans by voters. One of the top issues, I know you've been discussing it quite a bit. I've been discussing it with your colleagues in the last 12 to 24 hours, is the issue of Obamacare. Repealing it and replacing it. Some complications on the replace side.
Well, that's an understatement, Tony. You know, they talk often about the 60-vote rule there, but really it's two rules. One is the motion to proceed to consider. That means to get a bill to the floor for debate and amendment. It takes 60 votes in the Senate to do that, other than on reconciliation. And reconciliation allows you to go around that. Now, it's always amazing to me that some of my friends that think I'm overly concerned about gridlock in the Senate, they say, well, we'll do this through reconciliation. Well, if it's okay to do it through reconciliation, why isn't it okay to do it through a slight rule change? But the problem we have is that we have the power through reconciliation, which only requires 51 votes to get it to the floor and to vote on it. We have the power to repeal the foundations of Obamacare, the financial underpinnings of it. But then we have to be able to replace it with something that requires at least 8 Democrats to join us. And the Democrats have said steadfastly they're not going to do that. And my even greater fear is that they might join us on something, but demand out of a hostage-taking syndrome, demand some policy mechanism that would completely vitiate our whole reason for replacing it, and that ultimately would hurt the country and deliberately hurt Republicans. And I don't know what we're going to do about that. I mean, I spoke to Senator McConnell about even to put things on the floor like Born Alive on the Senate, and he was not helpful at all. I just have to tell you, this country is going to have to come to grips with the 60-vote rule in the Senate. Otherwise, it doesn't matter whether we have the majority or not. The Democrats still have the ability to put their foot on the throat of the Constitution and the Republic.
And Senator Chuck Schumer, who is leading that Democratic delegation there in the Senate, has made very clear that he will do just that. I did hear from your colleagues that you spoke out on the life issue, asking those questions. And I've had a number of conversations regarding the replace provision that they're trying to put into the reconciliation, which is kind of hard to fit it in. But some concerns, Trent, about the issue of abortion still being funded in that reconciliation bill the way it's being structured.
Yeah, well, here's what the concern is, Tony. Under the Republican plan, people would receive the people that, you know, need help that are in the economic circumstance where they need help to, with their insurance, they would receive a refundable tax credit to buy private insurance from the private sector. Now, I am fully in favor of that. I love that.
Right.
But the idea is that if they receive they have to spend it on insurance. And the idea is, like you, I don't want any kind of taxpayer imprimatur on buying insurance that includes killing children in it.
Abortion is not health care.
It's not health care. No, it's the absolute antithesis of health care. Health care is to preserve and protect life. You know, the doctor, primum non nocere, you know, first do no harm. Abortion is the absolute opposite of that. So those of us that are concerned about that say simply that that any health care or insurance that could be purchased by this would have to be absent abortion coverage. And if someone wanted more abortion coverage, even though you know that I'm committed to protecting the unborn, but if there was abortion coverage, that it would have to come as a completely separate thing where it would be paid for by private dollars. Because we just got off the floor here this last week, as you know, of putting in statute, at least on the House side, the Hyde Amendment, which would permanently say we're not going to force taxpayers to pay for the killing of American children.
Right.
So,
So what we're looking at here is, because of reconciliation, the method that's being used to repeal Obamacare, and then they're trying to replace it with another plan. We're being told that there are limits, so that those restrictions on those tax credits cannot be put in place to ensure that tax dollars are not going to abortion. So essentially what we have, if this goes forward, is a very similar, you know, accounting gimmick that the Obamacare used. It's a subsidy by a different name. And I can tell you that, and I know you know this because you've been saying it up there at the retreat. I've talked to the chairman of the Freedom Caucus. I've talked to the chairman of the RSC, and they're of the same mind that's a non-starter.
It could be fixed, Tony. This can be fixed. We can say no. We're not going to use a refundable tax credit to support or promote or subsidize any abortion coverage. We're just not going to do it. We just went through that debate, and we're saying that taxpayers should not be forced to do that. And if there's any abortion coverage, people should have to buy that themselves. Now, you understand, I say that in the context of the funding mechanism.
Right.
Believe that the unborn child should be protected in the law.
I got it.
Yeah, you understand.
I understand completely.
I know you understand. I guess I'm saying it for your listeners.
Yeah. I mean, what he's saying, folks, is that the you know what he's saying, but let me just say what he's saying. He's saying that people can do it with their own money what they want to do. We may not agree with it, but they can do it. But they cannot with taxpayer money. We cannot be a part of setting up a structure where your tax dollars would go toward funding abortion. The House just voted on that earlier this week to say, no, we're not going to have taxpayer funding of abortion. So why would we put it into the replace version of Obamacare? Is that right, Trent? That's what you're saying.
That's exactly right. You know, and I knew you understood that, Tony, and I appreciate you making it clear to the folks. You know, when we did this last week, I went on the floor and I simply said this. You know, we're always talking past each other, and I think sometimes deliberately on the side of the left, we're never really dealing with the real issue. The real issue with abortion is really one question. There's really one question here, and that is, does abortion kill a little baby? If it doesn't, Tony, I'm ready to stop talking about it.
Yeah.
But if abortion kills a baby, then you and I in this Washington, D.C., are in the middle of the greatest human genocide in the history of the human family. And We cannot stand by and let that happen, because if we do, we fail the test of our humanity and certainly the test of the American ideal.
So, Trent Franks, let me ask you, is the Republican leadership receiving that message? Do they understand that this is not going to work?
I think they do, but there's nothing that we should take for granted. We should do everything we can to emphasize that to them. But ultimately, the bigger issue, not the bigger issue, but the bigger problem here is this a motion to proceed to consider in the Senate, this 60-vote rule and the filibuster, because the Senate Democrats either can stop us cold or sow seeds of sabotage into the process, not the least of which would be the one we're discussing now. And it just completely distorts the entire process. We do not have accountability. We do not have clarity. It's like mixing dirt and ice cream. It never is something that works. And we've got to, as a people, deal with this, because the filibuster was put in place years ago to allow a vote. And they kept lowering the number because we got more and more polarized. We are so polarized now that to require the Senate to be able to even put things on the agenda, to require 8 Democrats, is foolishness. We've got to do something different, or otherwise it's not going to work. We're not going to be able to save the country if we don't do that. And we've got the best opportunity in the world, and this is the time to do it.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Trent Franks, Congressman of Arizona, represents the 8th Congressional District, a champion for the unborn. I want to play a real quick clip, Trent. This is of the president's remarks there earlier this afternoon. One short clip. Let's hear that. Listen to this, folks.
We've reinstated the Mexico City policy, a longstanding policy.
Trent, I wanted to play that, Trent, because the applause goes on. That was the longest applause. He got a standing ovation. He also got
That's exactly right when he mentioned
law enforcement. But that spoke volumes about what your colleague said on the abortion issue when he made that statement. It was very early on in his speech. What was the sense of the room when he made that?
Oh, it was electric for two reasons. One, because he was open, and we realized, dear God, you know, we finally have someone that has some compassion for the most innocent of all members of human society. And it's just such a difference from the previous president. But the other thing is that's not known very much, and that is that the Mexico policy that Mr. Trump signed was a much more enhanced one than even the one even George Bush, who I loved, signed. And it covers all of our foreign assistance. It says we are not going to, as Americans who believe that all of us are created equal, we're not going to use taxpayer dollars to fund the killing of fellow human beings overseas. We're not going to do it. And he did that, and I'll tell you what, it's a huge pointer, I think, to the character of Mr. Trump. And I'm thankful to God we're where we are, and I hope we do everything we can to be good stewards of this profound opportunity we've been given.
And a harbinger, I hope, of things to come. Trent Franks, thank you so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you, my friend.
God bless you, my friend. Bye-bye.
All right. Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona, great American. All right, when we return, we're going to talk about tomorrow's march and whether or not the media will cover it. It's going to be interesting since they've been fixated on marches and numbers. It was the Women's March, but they can't bring themselves, the media can't bring themselves to call tomorrow the March for Life. It's anti-abortion. It'll go away.
Isn't it refreshing to have a president that isn't hostile to Christianity? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with the American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our country was founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview. There's no question about it. The Christian religion was dominant in early America, and there's a reason our country was called a Christian nation. We're going to see this rich history when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June, and then the other one in September. In addition, we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour, but you can do both of those tours with us if you would like to. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be our historian as he tells us about our great Christian heritage and history. For more information on either of these tours, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
The Rapid Response Arm of 8 Days of Hope is responding to tornado victims in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. On January 21st, a tornado severely damaged hundreds of homes and killed 4 people. Will you please volunteer to help Hattiesburg residents? Here's 8 Days of Hope director, Steve Tiber.
We need your help today. I mean, it's that simple. We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. You know, the best sermon I ever heard was the one I saw. We're just there to love others as God commands us. And here's where you and I get to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
To volunteer to help with Hattiesburg tornado relief, please visit 8daysofhope.com. Financial donations are also needed to support this ministry effort. To give, please visit 8daysofhope.com and pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this devastating tornado. 8 Days of Hope is a nonprofit Christian ministry.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
To Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, known as the March for Life, hundreds of thousands of people will be here in our nation's capital tomorrow. Actually, tomorrow morning, beginning around 8 o'clock, we'll have our own event that precedes the march. It's our Pro-Life Con. It's the largest online activist gathering of pro-life activists. To find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow links over. Invite you to join us. It'll be live on Facebook beginning at about 8 o'clock tomorrow morning Eastern time. Anyway, tomorrow's march will draw thousands, hundreds of thousands, and the media generally fails to report on it. But during an interview yesterday with ABC, President Trump left the reporter, David Muir, speechless when he criticized the media for its lack of coverage of this historic march. Joining us now is Dan Gaynor. He's Vice President of Business and Culture for the Media Research Center. Dan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's a pleasure to be back, especially this week of all weeks.
All right. You guys, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow? Is the media going to be shamed into covering the march? I mean, you got Vice President Pence is going to be speaking at the first time you've ever had someone of that high level actually make a physical appearance at the march. You had the women's march last weekend that the media, I mean, talked about for 72 hours. Are they going to be forced to cover this?
Well, I think they'll cover it a little bit more just because Pence is there. I think that the combination of Donald Trump calling them out and Mike Pence being there makes it difficult for them to dodge it. But we need to keep it in context. The amount that they covered the Women's March was 129 times what they covered the March for Life last year. And most of that March for Life coverage, which was barely anything, it was two mentions. One of them was when March for Life people got caught in the horrible snowstorm to go home, and they got a casual mention of, oh, they had been in D.C. for the March for Life. That's embarrassing. That's horrible, supposed journalism.
Well, it's also, I noticed that the Women's March, which is what they called it. They called it the Women's March, and that's what the media called it. The media called it the Women's March, even though it was a pro-abortion, radical demonstration. Well, the March for Life, been called that for, you know, four decades. They want to call it an anti-abortion demonstration. That's what the media calls it.
You know, this is the part of the game the media play all the time. They allow themselves, and they're liberal, to set the terms of debate. So even the New York Times won't actually call the March for Life a March for Life. That's its name. They'll go out of their way to use crazy terms that liberals use, but they won't actually call it by its name because they want to depict it as anti-something, not pro. And it's all part of the liberal spin.
So what's your anticipation for tomorrow? How do you think they're going to cover it, given what Donald Trump has said, given that the vice president's going to be there, and given that there is such a clear a benchmark to evaluate them by with coverage last weekend of the Women's March?
Oh, I think they'll cover it a little bit. Will they cover it more than an hour's worth? No. And that's what the Women's March got in. If you really, we just focused on the major broadcast stuff that they did. They went live with streaming, and they covered it, you know, on all sorts of outlets, obscure outlets. This was pushed by the left, promoted by the left, so that a lot of people would attend it. And then when a lot of people attend, they say, "See, look at all the people attending." They wouldn't show how it was a liberal agenda item. They wouldn't show how anti-pro-life it was. They wouldn't talk about what it stood for, the principles of abortion, etc. So I think that they'll be shamed enough to cover it. Maybe even all three networks will find a few seconds to cover it, but just nothing in comparison.
Well, here's a prediction I have, Dan. Unlike last weekend's march, where they had to apologize and bleep out certain things that were made by some of the speakers, that won't happen at tomorrow's March for Life. There'll be no profanity from the stage. There'll be none of that taking place at tomorrow's March for Life.
That one I would bet my bottom dollar on. But will you see it from the counter protesters? Very likely. The counter protesters, or even last week the regular protesters, in this supposedly nice march, what they weren't saying, an awful sign, the Madonna dropping three different F-bombs before they finally pulled the live feed, and then they still, they don't want to say anything negative because it's Madonna. All the journalists who do this kind of stuff are basically fangirls.
Yeah. Well, it is going to be interesting to see if they up their game and what kind of coverage they give, whether it's fair coverage or not, or whether it's slanted. Because as you pointed out, it's a big difference when you cover something live and you allow the participants to speak for themselves rather than commentators basically telling people what they said.
Yeah, I can almost guarantee if they give it any coverage at all, they'll be sure to cover the other side, because that's what they do. They, you know, it's a conservative event. We're going to show these 20 protesters at the conservative event who are on the other side.
Yeah, they're very good about that. Well, I tell you what we'll do, Dan. We'll get you back on next week, and we'll give you time to do your analysis of comparing the media's coverage of last weekend's women's pro-abortion march to tomorrow's March for Life. That will be taking place with, I would say, now there was a big crowd here last week. I was here. I was making my way through the crowd. A big crowd, but I believe tomorrow's crowd will be just as big. A lot of folks coming to D.C.
Yeah, and when you've been doing it for 40 years, you would think you would get more than 35 seconds as we got last year. So hopefully they'll do a little better. Maybe Donald Trump woke them up a little bit.
Yeah, I think he may have shamed them into providing some coverage. Dan Gaynor, as always, great to have you on. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Bye. All right, Dan Gaynor with the Media Research Center, a watchdog, keeping an eye on the media. Boy, they got their work cut out for them. I have to tell you, though, I mean, I like the way Donald Trump just challenges the media. I mean, it is, it's refreshing. I mean, they don't know how to handle it. So it's going to be interesting to watch that unfold in the days ahead. All right, coming up next, resolutions have been introduced to block a bill authorizing physician-assisted suicide right here in our nation's capital. We'll talk with one of the authors of the bill, Congressman Brad Winstrup of Ohio. Don't go away. We're back right after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, not only are markets doing well this week here in the U.S., but globally, everyone reacting on our Dow plowing over 20,000 points, pretty significant to say the least, closing at new record highs. And it looks as though it's going to continue. There's no reason for it to not continue, although I would expect some pullback down below 20, even if it is for a short period of time. Oil stocks are moving ahead, even in light of higher inventories. That's troubling, because I think that if we are having higher inventories this week, I think next week is not going to be any better. As a matter of fact, I expect it to be worse. But the upside to oil is we could, by summer, start to see some drawdown. We're watching Asia stocks really taking off, as well as most of the stocks throughout the Eurozone. Spain's unemployment rate falling to 18.5%. That sounds crazy, but that's good for Spain, and things continue to prosper throughout the Eurozone. The UK GDP growth for fourth quarter looks like it's going to settle in at 0.6%, outperforming most of the European nations, and this in spite of all the drama in and around Brexit. So we continue to see a Trump kind of enthusiasm and excitement. Yesterday on Fox Business, I said, look, it almost doesn't matter what he's doing. The fact of the matter is we have a president that's been in office a few days and is actually doing things instead of just talking about them. That alone begins to build some incredible optimism.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, in the District of Columbia, it's kind of arranged differently. There's the Home Rule Act, which it allows Congress to review actions by the District of Columbia, their government. And they do some crazy things up here. Well, one that they did recently was the Death with Dignity Act. It allows an adult who has been diagnosed with a terminal disease, and that term terminal is not clearly defined in the ordinance, having less than 6 months to live, to receive a prescription for medication to end his or her life. Well, Congress is now exercising their oversight responsibility and authority. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma and Congressman Brad Winstrup, a doctor of Ohio, have introduced a companion resolutions, one in the House, one in the Senate, a disapproval resolution to overturn the Death with Dignity Act. Now with us is Representative Winstrup of Ohio. He was elected in 2012 and has served in U.S. Army Reserve since 1998. He's also a physician, and we're glad to welcome him here today. Brad, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, we got an update earlier from one of your colleagues, Trent Franks, on the happenings there in Philadelphia. So we're kind of keeping up with what you guys are doing up there. But I want to jump in. I know you're going to be back here for the march tomorrow, but I want to jump into this bill on allowing Congress to exercise its authority over the District of Columbia. Tell our listeners what this is intended to do and why.
Well, we have a constitutional duty and an authority over the District of Columbia, and it's been that way since the beginning of the Washington, D.C. area. And, you know, keep in mind that area was a swamp until we brought our federal government there. So it should be
literally a swamp. It was.
Right,
folks don't know that. It was literally a swamp here.
Yes, that word's being thrown around a lot today, right? But it literally was. And so we've had this authority to oversee. And the way I look at it is Washington, D.C. has 100 senators and 435 members of Congress, plus one non-voting representative. So when we see something like this being done, we feel a need to act. And as a doctor, you know, we were taught do no harm. And it's about compassion and comfort and cures. That's really what we should be about. And for physicians to write a prescription to end someone's life just is somewhat beyond me. besides that, this bill is full of complications and flaws. You mentioned terminal disease. Well, there's a lot of terminal diseases that, if untreated, people will die. But if they are treated, they are sometimes cured and many times can live many, many years with continued maintenance and treatment, such as diabetes or some forms of leukemia. And so it seems to me that this is so poorly written and a bad idea all the way around, besides the moral aspects of it. And as a doctor, I also see where insurance and government gets involved, and it becomes cost over compassion. And so insurance companies or government may say, well, we won't pay for your chemotherapy, but we will pay for this prescription for you to end your life. Now, on a personal note, my sister had leukemia 22 years ago, and they weren't going to cover bone marrow transplant. They said it's experimental. We forged on, we fought them, we got some coverage, but we were going to do it anyway. It's 22 years later, and she's married and has two children. But, you know, this is the situation and how they act, and we don't want people forced into this type of situation.
Well, Congressman Winthrop, isn't this also a part of the overarching debate over the sanctity and the value, the inherent value of human life?
It definitely is. Who feels that they should be playing God in these situations? You know, I just don't think that that's what the good Lord had in mind when he gave us the challenges of illnesses and the ability as physicians to tend to people, of all caregivers, to tend to people. And ending life is just goes against the grain of everything that we should be about.
But when you have someone that is diagnosed with a terminal disease or a disease, and, I mean, it obviously has an emotional effect upon them. I mean, are they at a point where they should be making a decision about ending their life? I mean, this is setting us up as a society when you are saying, all right, you got this terminal illness, your life no longer matters, and so here, let us go ahead and we'll end your life right now. And that's the message.
Right, yes, and what we see in other countries is this is trickling down to young people. And with this bill, too, there's only self-reporting by physicians. There's no supervision. You don't know if somebody else has actually administered this medication. There's no consultation with families required. It's just so inhumane to me from the get-go. It shouldn't take place at all, and then it's just written so poorly. And then we're not even able to review these events of the reporting that does happen by FOIA. That's blocked. It's just bad in every single way. And that's why we've come forward with this disapproval resolution. And, you know, people say, well, maybe we shouldn't be in D.C.'s business. But I disagree 100%. And we may need to look at this as a nation.
Well, they're funded in large part with federal money. That's where they get most of their money from. We're up against a break. Congressman, very quickly, what can our listeners do to help?
Weigh in with your members of Congress and in the Senate and let them know that you don't think that this is the way the country should be going. And let us know that you have our back as we go forward. And please pray.
All right. Congressman Brad Winthrop, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Congressman from Ohio, from the Buckeye State. All right, the switchboard number, by the way, if you'd like to call your member of Congress and say, ask them to weigh in on this, 202-224-3121. I'll give that number again when we get back from the break. When we come back, I want to talk more about this issue of human life, the sanctity of human life. We're going to talk about that here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back right after this message.
Can a Facebook post save a life? Or a tweet or an Instagram picture? At Family Research Council's 12th annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, pro-life activists from around the country will gather to explore the impact that digital media has on the culture of human life. Watch free online the morning of Friday, January 27th from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, activists, and testimonies from families and individuals who choose life. At the intersection of cutting-edge technology and a passion for the lives of the unborn, you'll be educated and empowered to better reach your community on platforms like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and more. You'll be better prepared to make an impact for the pro-life movement anytime and anywhere. Also, See live coverage from the National Mall as the March for Life gets underway. Tune in on January 27th at frc.org/prolifecon. Again, visit frc.org/prolifecon for more information.
Something is happening in Memphis. Women are having their babies. For years, life-affirming people have prayed to bring programs to the city, helping women get informed. Christ-centered nonprofits help by providing free, full-service care in the city's underserved areas. Discover more about how abortion numbers decline. Sign up for a free one-year subscription of the AFA Journal at afajournal.org.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Just months following Hillary Clinton's presidential loss, the Clinton Global Initiative, a division of the Clinton Foundation, is closing its doors. The Clinton Foundation has seen a drastic drop in donations from foreign governments since Clinton's election loss. For example, the small country of Norway, which yearly has given millions, has now slashed their donations to the Clinton Foundation by 87%. If the work of the Clinton Foundation was truly philanthropic, why the drastic decrease? It seems obvious that donations were meant to garner political favor rather than help the poor and needy. As Dinesh D'Souza commented, when you can't sell influence anymore, the customers start leaving. We shouldn't mock the downfall of others, but we should remember the truth of God's word. Your sins will find you out. That's a sobering thought for all of us. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
I'm Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch. Glad you're with us on this Thursday afternoon. Tomorrow, the March for Life. A lot of activities tomorrow, beginning at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, the Pro-Life Con here at the Family Research Council headquarters. We'll have folks, we'll have a packed house in our media center, but you'll be able to participate online no matter where you are in the world. You can be a part of Pro-Life Con. It's the largest online pro-life initiative surrounding the March for Life. You can go to frc.org, find out more, or go on Facebook in the morning, FRC's Facebook page. All right, here's what I want to talk about. It's been interesting to watch, especially since last week and then the president last weekend when the Women's March took place, and it was all about, I mean, abortion rights and so on and so forth. And then the president this week, Mexico City, and as Congressman Trent Franks pointed out earlier, it's a much stronger policy. Now, it's called Mexico City because that's where Ronald Reagan first signed the bill, but it's universal in its application in terms of our foreign aid and foreign spending. So it's a much stronger executive order. But since then, you've had all these people talking about, the left is going berserk. And I want to, I'm sure there's a lot of you, some of you, that at one point in time, maybe you didn't see the significance of the life issue. And maybe you were on the other side. In fact, if you were on the other side, I'd really like to hear from you. What was it that brought about your transformation to understanding the importance of the life issue? I mean, I think I've shared this story before. I've certainly written about it in one of the books that I wrote. That, you know, prior to the age of five, I was in an unchurched home. But after that, my folks got saved, and we were going to church regularly. And so, you know, I was in a Christian home. I never heard anybody preach about abortion. I had no clue. I'd heard about the pro-life movement, and so I assumed, look, I'm a Christian, I'm pro-life. But it wasn't until 1992 when Operation Rescue came to Baton Rouge, And I was, at the time, working with the police department. And I didn't work the event, the demonstration at the abortion clinic. I kind of just went and observed. And it was so amazing to see this clash, literal and spiritual. And I videotaped it, and I actually ended up, I wrote some articles about it because I was shocked at what I saw some of my colleagues in law enforcement doing to some of these pro-life protesters who were also my friends. I mean, so I had friends on both sides of this, and I was just shocked at what I saw happening to these peaceful protesters. And long story short, the police department didn't like me speaking out about it, and so I was, that was my exit from law enforcement. But it was at that point that I realized that this is much more than a political issue. And this was really ground zero of our culture, that if we could not take a stand as a society in protecting the most vulnerable, that did not lend itself to a good outcome. And of course, we've seen the growing violence in our country. I mean, you go to places like Chicago, and you just see the devaluing of human life. And it's a very dangerous path. And of course, I mean, having gone through that experience, I'm obviously much more vocal in my pro-life perspective. And I've talked to a number of people who have come to a pro-life understanding, and it's certainly a much stronger view because they have a much stronger story in what the transformation that took place. Anyway, the number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I would like to hear your story. If you at one time were on the other side, you were on the side where you thought abortion was a good thing and you were considered yourself to be pro-abortion, pro-choice, whatever you want to call it, but now you're pro-life. I'd like to hear your story. All right, let's go to Arizona where David is on the line. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to kind of recount what happened to me. I was a young man back in the early 80s, and my best friend and mentor was a doctor. He was my running partner, and he was staunch pro-life, and I was pro-choice, very liberal at that time, and he would talk to me about the issues, and one day I was waiting for him. We were going to run on his lunch hour, and he handed me a stack of papers that detailed the partial birth abortion procedure as I waited for him. And I read that procedure, and it's an emotional thing when I think about it to this day. But when he came back in the room about 20 minutes later, it looked like that paper had been out in a rainstorm. It was just covered in my tears. And that completely changed me from that point on. And I realized that was a human being that was being, you know, torn to pieces. And from that day on, I became pro-life. And in a short period of time, I became a real staunch conservative. But just being faced with the facts and reading them there in black and white forever changed me.
Wow. Thank you, David, for calling and sharing that, because I think that is so important. That is why the facts are important, but it's also why the facts of abortion are hidden. I recall just a couple of years ago, my oldest daughter's in nursing school, and she was doing some of her preliminary classes in college. And there was a discussion about, I don't know if it was Planned Parenthood or abortion, it was something related to that. And, you know, my kids, obviously, you know, they're exposed to a lot of discussion, you know, our discussion around the dinner table, you know, adult stem cell research, embryonic stem cell research, abortion, human sexuality. I mean, we talk about the issues that are relevant and, of course, what the Bible has to say about it. But anyway, she spoke up and challenged what was being said about a baby in the womb. And she shared with me how there was one girl in there that said, "You mean this is not a blob of tissue? I mean, this is the 21st century with the technology we have, but Planned Parenthood has continued to convince these women that it's just a blob of tissue. It's not a baby." And, of course, technology is showing us at a younger and younger point, even down to, I think, most recently, 10 days. You can detect a heartbeat. So, David, thank you so much. Very insightful. All right, let's go to Jenny in Texas. Jenny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. You kind of stole my thunder a little bit. I'm a nurse, and when I first started nursing school, it was in 72, and it really was considered a blob. I mean, I didn't know anything better than that. And then one of the girls that was in my nursing class became pregnant, and it's a long time ago, you couldn't really be pregnant and go through the program. And so one of the LVNs who had helped with abortions before said she'd take care of it. Well, I was going in there. I just going to support my friends, you know. And we went in there, and she did it. And here's this most perfect child delivered and died, and that was it. I can't really talk about it. But
wow.
That blob was a perfect child.
And that's exactly what they do not want women to know. And that's why some of these laws that are being passed in the various states, like the ultrasound, where, you know, they just, in fact, women who get an ultrasound in their pregnancy, about 80% of them choose life because of what Jenny's just talking about. They realize it is a human being. Jenny, thank you so much for calling and sharing that story. Powerful. That's why it's important that we do speak up lovingly and with compassion for the hope of getting women not to make this choice that yes, it's about the life of a baby, but it's also about the life of that mother because they carry the wounds of that. And even, you know, there's forgiveness, there's healing. I mean, I've seen so many women that have been, you know, have been set free when they got the forgiveness, when they realized that God could forgive them of that as they carried that guilt. And he can absolutely, and he does, and he will. But there's still the emotional scars, and there's still the difficulty that comes from that. And that's why many of these right-to-know laws that have been passed is simply giving the mother all of the information so that they can make an informed decision. Let them, you know, why is the pro-abortion movement afraid of the facts? Why are they afraid? All right, let's go to Missouri, and Nancy is on the line. Nancy, welcome to Washington Watch. Nancy, you there?
Oh.
Yeah, go ahead, Nancy.
Okay. Back when I was pro-choice, I was a young adult, 20, you know, I'm out of college, didn't really have a strong relationship with God, it was more about the woman and, you know, if you get pregnant and it's inconvenient, you know, your life, you think of it, the mindset is, oh, your life is going to be ruined because you had this baby, you're going to have this baby out of wedlock or something, and, you know, the inconvenience, and then, oh, the child's not going to, you know, maybe if the mom's on, you know, drug addict or something, and, you know, there's all these reasons that, you know, the child is going to be born addicted or, you know, what have you. But as I grew in my relationship with the Lord, I became saints, and I started just slowly over the years, you know, as the Holy Spirit worked on me, and I just developed this different worldview that, you know, God, excuse me, you know, just because bad things happen in your life, you know, God can use those things to develop your character, and you never know how he's going to use that thing, whatever the hard thing is. And, you know, pregnancy, out of wedlock pregnancy is just one of those things that God can use to both build your character and also just open your eyes to just how much God loves you, because I didn't really understand about love until I had my own child.
And
you know, once I never wanted children. I mean, it was never anything that was my heart's desire to have children. But once I had a child, as soon as that baby was placed in my arms, it just melted my heart. And, I mean, I was a Christian already at that time, but, I mean, it just changed me. And it's just amazing how God can use things that, you know, the people, you know, the ways of the world, they don't recognize, you know, they just think that it's this horrible thing. But God can take horrible things and make something beautiful out of it.
And, without question.
It's just sad that people don't understand that. So.
Without question. And the flip side of that, Nancy, is that we compound bad decisions. You know, obviously, there are challenges when you have children out of wedlock. You know, the challenges for the children, challenges for the single mom. I mean, there's so many complications and problems. But you don't want to compound that by ending the life of that child. Obviously, the child didn't do anything wrong, but the complications that then creates for that woman going forward. So you're absolutely right. And I've met, you know, I've had the benefit of meeting so many people over my lifetime in politics in the last 20 plus years working in the pro-life movement. And the stories of those who were not aborted, whose mothers chose life. I think of James Robinson is one. Everybody knows him. He has an amazing story. His mother was raped, a single woman, and she couldn't get an abortion back then, tried to but couldn't, and you know, he's obviously, look at the contribution he's made, and there's so many others. So you're absolutely right, Nancy. Thank you so much for the call. You know, I've watched as I've been speaking out in these last few days. On Twitter, it's been amazing the hate that has been expressed by the pro-abortion side and women saying, you know, don't tell me what I can do with my body. Well, I'm not. I mean, you know, just because you want to use our tax dollars to have an abortion, you can't tell us what to do with our money. I mean, you can do what you want. I mean, obviously, you can control your own body. You don't have to have sex, which leads to pregnancy. But it's just amazing how, I don't know, they cannot see the issues here, the real issue. Anyway, thank you all for sharing the stories. And they need to be told more, because I think as more people experience that's why I see that we see a growing movement, pro-life movement in America. The numbers continue to grow up as more and more Americans through technology and through personal stories are embracing life. And that gives us hope as a nation. All right, folks, out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, the Apostle Paul says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.